This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by Sky Pass Entertainment's new movie, The Least of These, The Graham Stain Story. The Least of These, rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13, in theaters February 1st. More information is available at theleastofthese.movie.
This is Janet Mefford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mefford.
Thank you so much for joining us again. Well, Jesus said in Matthew 10:16, "Behold, I am sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves, so be wise as serpents and innocent as doves." How does that verse apply, though, when we go to work and, unfortunately, increasingly face anti-Christian hostility or even some forms of persecution on the job? What is the wisest way to respond, and how do we respond biblically? We're going to talk about that today with Dr. David Goetsch, who is Emeritus Vice President and Professor of Business at Northwest Florida State College, where he has served for 43 years. He also maintains a biblical counseling ministry focusing on issues Christians face in the workplace. And today we will be talking about his book, Christians on the Job, Winning at Work Without Compromising Your Faith. Dr. Goetsch, it's great to have you here. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you, and thank you for all you do with your program.
Well, thank you. How do you see the overall picture of what it means to be a Christian in the workplace today? What kinds of issues do you see Christians facing on the job just for being Christians?
Well, it's getting worse, just to put it mildly. You know, everything that happens in society eventually finds its way into the workplace, and you know better than anybody all that's happening in society. At work, you have the age-old problems of temptation and peer pressure and that human desire to fit in, and that can cause problems for Christians, but those have always been there. We've always had to deal with that.
Right.
But anymore, we're seeing more and more instances of anti-Christian bias, political correctness, and even persecution. Just 2 weeks ago, I talked with a person who was told he could no longer drive his car to work because it had one of our Florida right to life a bumper. We still can get a tag in Florida that's a pro-life tag.
Yeah.
You have to buy it, but we get. And he had one on his car, and he's told he could no longer drive that car to work.
What? That's crazy. Just for having a license plate that somebody doesn't agree with, he can't drive?
For having a pro-life, pro-Christian license plate, he's told he could not drive on the campus of where he made his living.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
That is incredible. What was his response to it, just out of curiosity? How did he answer that directive, you can't drive your car here?
Well, he came to me for help, and I directed him to the very last chapter in my book, which is, okay, so what do you do when anti-Christian bias and rejection and that type of thing crosses a line over into persecution, which I feel that was the case.
Yeah.
And I directed him to the Alliance Defending Freedom, who handles these kinds of cases, and told him, look, you need to stand up. You're right. And you need to stand up when you're right. And Alliance Defending Freedom will help you. And frankly, Alliance Defending Freedom wins about 90% of its cases.
Yeah.
These types of things, when they're done, are done by people who don't think through, and they think they can simply bully Christians because we'll turn the other cheek. And so I told him, right after you turn the other cheek, call Alliance Defending Freedom.
Good words. Good words. I think that's well said. But, you know, we are seeing this change. As you've mentioned before, there have always been struggles on the job of various types, but we are now seeing a growing anti-Christian hostility as the culture changes. Do you see a particular moment in time when the fight became worse for Christians, or when the situation became worse for Christians on the job, and it was kind of a turning point?
Well, I'm afraid what we've been doing is boiling the frog, and it's my generation. I hate to say it, but I am a child of this. Well, I was born in the 50s, so I did my formative years in the 60s, and I see the 60s as when it all started, and then we've been boiling the frog ever since, and it's just been creeping and creeping and creeping up on us. But yes, I felt like, probably the first election of Barack Obama was where I started seeing more and more people coming to me with not the old-fashioned temptation, peer pressure, and that kind of problem, but the new anti-Christian political correctness. And I must hear now, Janet, I bet I hear 10 times a month, you have freedom of religion where I work unless it's the Christian religion.
Right, right. I know that is how it's becoming. If you were a Muslim and you were wearing a hijab, you'd get the red carpet rolled out for you. But if you're a Christian, you know, you're a third class, fourth class citizen. And it's funny because look at the history and the roots and the foundation of this country. The Bible is the very foundation of this country, even though not every single founder was a Bible believing Christian. This has been, for you know, the most part, a Christian country, culturally at least. How in the world is it that the mindset has changed and said there's one religion that we can treat differently?
Well, we've become a nation that panders to different groups for political reasons, unfortunately. And we have people, I say it now, we have people who would rather see America fail than see it succeed under someone who believes as a Christian. And one of the points I make in my book, though, and this is just, I spend a lot of time when I'm wearing my business professor's hat and when I'm wearing my hat as a management consultant, I spend a lot of time with businesses who tell me, Dave, I cannot get employees who are honest, dependable, diligent. They are saying to me, I can't get employees who believe the Christian work ethic is set forth in Scripture.
Yeah.
And yet they don't want to call it that. But those are the values that still make you succeed in the workplace.
Sure.
And so I make the point in my book, listen, you stick to who you are and what you believe. A career is a marathon, not a sprint.
Good.
You might get beat up in the short run for your beliefs, but in the long run, you're going to prevail. I know I did. And I spent 43 years so far in higher education. Other than Congress, there's probably not a place in the world more unfriendly to Christianity than higher education.
Yeah, I hear you having spent many years in newsrooms, so I'm with you on that. I put the newsrooms of America right up there in that category. But it's true. Are you seeing more conflicts, would you say, between, say, bosses and Christian employees, or between non-Christian employees and Christian employees? In other words, is it between employees that there's more conflict, or is it the boss who's more upset with the Christian who's the employee?
I'm seeing more this result of peer pressure. And what's happening, you know, people know when they're doing wrong. So it's like misery loves company. People who are doing wrong want company too. If you're the only person doing right and they're doing wrong, you're going to come under a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing that all the time. One of the stories I tell in my book is of the people who worked at three different branches, and they would go out to eat every Friday. And one of them came up with the idea of, look, why don't we call this a business lunch and claim that we were entertaining potential clients? That way, we can claim it as a business lunch and get reimbursed by our bank for our meals instead of having to pay for it. And only one of the people there said, no, this is not right. That's stealing. This is not a business lunch. We're here as friends having fun.
Yeah.
And so she wouldn't do it. And they went ahead without her and just excluded her from the group. And several months later, she saw an email coming email through all the bank that those three had been caught and fired for their nefarious little scheme.
Wow. Wow. In that kind of a scenario, would you have advised her to go to the boss and to reveal the scheme or to just keep her mouth shut? How would you handle that?
What I had, eventually when we talked, what I had told her to do, she didn't know what to do, and she let it go for a while. And by the time she talked to me and I told her what to do, this other thing happened. But what I advised her to do was go to those three people and give them a certain amount of time, say a couple of days, to stop, or she would have to go to the boss.
Good. Yeah. That's the right thing to do. I mean,
because,
yeah.
Well, sure. I mean, Christ expects us not to do wrong, but he doesn't expect us to abide wrongdoing either.
Correct.
He expects us to stand up to sin wherever it exists.
Yes, that's right. And that's such a difficult place to be in because you just want to go to work and get along with people and do your job and receive your paycheck. And I have heard so many stories just like you have, not as many, surely, but, you know, just anecdotes of Christians who say, I'm just trying to get my job done. And then I'm in this situation. And sometimes I'm not really sure how I ought to handle it. But there is a lot more to talk about. We're going to come back. Dr. David Goetsch, my guest, his book is called Christians on the Job. Stay with us. We'll come back on Janet Mefford Today. Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to your health care? As a Christian, are you looking for health care that doesn't violate your morals and convictions? Well, we're happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded Christians who work together to pay for their medical costs. It allows you to decide how, when, and where you will access health care so you can make the best choice for you and your family. Starting at $199 a month for a single, up to $529 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. This is how healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com and regain control over your healthcare costs. 855-585-4237 or lightyourliberty.com. Together, we're changing healthcare for good.
From Sky Pass Entertainment comes The Least of These, The Graham Stain Story. When speculation mounts that a local missionary is converting locals to Christianity in India, a journalist must choose between his own ambition and the truth.
You can't make any mistakes. They have this law for a reason.
I know. We must pray.
Based on the true story, The Least of These, The Graham Stain Story, rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13. In theaters February 1st. More information is available at theleastofthese.movie.
What would happen if conservative evangelical churches began to embrace queer theology? Do we really want to find out? Join me, Janet Mefford, at the upcoming God's Voice Conference, February 22nd and 23rd in Oklahoma City. Find out how sexual radicals are working to undermine sound doctrine in our churches and how to stand on God's word at this critical time. Come stand with us at the God's Voice Conference. Register now at godsvoice.us. That's godsvoice.us. We'll see you there. We're back on Janet Mefford Today. Glad you're here and glad to be talking with Dr. David Goetsch, who is Emeritus Vice President and Professor of Business at Northwest Florida State College. His book is called Christians on the Job, Winning at Work Without Compromising Your Faith. This is such a practical topic. It really applies to all of us to some degree, Dr. Goetsch, and I'm glad that you've written this. When we're talking about a basic approach, going into work, living your life as a disciple of Jesus Christ, letting your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. What is a good starting place? If you have someone who's listening who says, I'm about to start a new job, I want to be faithful to Christ on the job, but I also want to be a good employee. What are some basic tips you would give that Christian going into a new job, some good ground rules for being a Christian in the workplace?
That's a very good question. The book lays out a 12-step plan for just doing that, but let me just take one of them and emphasize it. I always tell Christians, approach your job as a ministry. Think of yourself as a missionary and let your example be a daily sermon. Okay. We're not hired to go into our jobs and preach sermons all day, and we're not hired to pull people away from the work they're being paid to do and sermonize or read the Bible to them. We do that on breaks and before and after. But during work, we need to set example of the Christian work ethic. We need to be honest. We need to be diligent. We need to treat people in a Christ-like manner, whether they're customers or whether they're fellow employees. We need to show people in the workplace who may not know Christ and know his way, we need to show them a better way, and we do that by our example. And I always bring up the famous quote from Charles Spurgeon that all Christians are either missionaries or imposters. And he didn't mean we all have to run to far-off lands to be missionaries. He meant you are a missionary where God plants you, and you're a child of God, so there ought to be a family resemblance in your example.
That's excellent. And you pointed out something very important, which is you're not hired to preach sermons all day. And I don't know a lot of Christians who would do that, but that sometimes will come out. Can I witness to somebody on the job? Generally speaking, not while you're working, right? You're not doing
That's
evangelism
right.
when you're being paid to do your job, maybe lunch hour, after work, something like that. But what would you say to a Christian about that?
I tell them, if you want to evangelize at work, set a good example of the Christian work ethic. Do your job the best you can. Be the best there is there. Be give value back to the person who's employing you, because that is being a missionary. That's the example they need to see. They need to see that people who are children of God do a good job when they are paid to do a good job. They get the job done right. They get it on time. They can be depended on, they can be relied on, all of those things. And so that's the example you set. And then that example may cause these people to say, I'd like to know more about why you work the way you do. All right, after work, let's you and I stop somewhere and talk. Or at lunch, let's you and I have a talk. I'll break out the Bible and show you exactly what I believe and why I believe it.
Good. That's excellent. Yeah, what you're saying is so important, that we are to be good employees. I mean, we're kind of losing this. I have such strong feelings as you do about the Christian work ethic and how important it is to be on time, do the job you were hired to do. Don't waste time if you don't have something to do. This is something instilled in me by my parents, of course. If you have downtime at work, ask, what can I do? Don't just sit there and waste the company's time. These things, though, are kind of fading away. You're not seeing as much of this, it seems, as you did years ago, where people are naturally all doing that. You can really stand out by having that kind of work ethic these days.
Yeah, we used to be what I call PhDs. In America, we were poor, hungry, and driven.
Yeah.
I don't mean PhDs like me. I mean we were poor, hungry, and driven. And now it's almost as if we're fat, lazy, and complacent. And I'm even seeing it in Christian families that are not passing on the Christian work ethic. I'm even seeing churches that are not. And in this book, Jan, if you can look at the end of any chapter, there's actual instructional material at the end of every chapter, like review questions and discussion questions and discussion cases, so that Sunday schools and Bible studies and prayer breakfasts can use it to actually teach that Christian work ethic, because the church has got to get engaged in this. If we don't pass on the Christian work ethic, who's going to?
Exactly. That's excellent. Well, now, your subtitle of your book, Winning at Work Without Compromising Your Faith. Let's talk a little bit about the compromising angle, because you are increasingly seeing situations at work, as you mentioned and talk about in the book, where to do what you're told would mean that you're not doing the Christ-like thing, whether it's cheating or going along with a certain practice. How do you help Christians discern how to handle situations like that? For example, if you're, we're all going to cheat the bank and we're going to put this on their tab, even though it's not really a business lunch. Generally speaking, what would you say to Christians about how to handle awkward situations, especially if you feel like your job is in jeopardy if you don't go along with it?
Yes, and I've seen that many times, had it happen to me myself, and I've counseled many people. That's chapter 5 in our book, and it's called Be Wise and Innocent When Translating Scripture into Action. Here's the problem. You and I go to church on Sunday. If we see a brother or sister who's doing something they shouldn't, we can approach them in a certain way because we all have the Bible as the center of, you know, that's going to be our guidance in dealing with this. And we have our Christian beliefs and values. But if you're dealing with people who reject the Bible or don't know it, you have to find what I call a workplace appropriate way to approach them. And here is what I have found over the years. Often the personal self-interests of the people who are doing wrong mesh with our Christian beliefs. Here's what I mean. You can say to somebody, okay, I understand why you want to do that, get a little extra money in your check, but what happens when you're caught? Who's going to be blamed when you're caught? And I keep a whole file of articles for my students in college and for my counseling clients of people whose careers have crashed and burned because they did the wrong thing thinking they wouldn't get caught.
Wow.
And so throughout the book, I give examples of this where you go into your boss and he's wanting you to file a false report to make the sales look better or something. You say, well, let me show you what happened here in this article. Can I get you to read this? It's going to be worse for us when this is found out. And in this day and time, it's always found out. So So no matter whether they believe in Christ or not, they do believe in their own self-interest.
Yeah.
And when you can point out ways that their self-interests are vulnerable because of this short-sighted decision they're making, it'll turn them around.
That's a really good idea. I like that a lot. Now, for the person who really is experiencing a form of persecution on the job, and a lot of us know examples of that or have lived it out, how do you help someone discern when to fight back and when to leave and just walk away or to stay and fight? I mean, it's difficult at times to know whether or not to mount the fight or whether or not it's just better off find a new job and just forget about it. How do you make your way through those sorts of circumstances?
Or do both, find another job and also fight back.
Yeah, right.
After the fact.
Right.
What I do in those cases is if I sit and talk with them, and that's when they need some help. That's when they need some counseling help. And sometimes even that's not enough. I mean, I've got 50 years of experience in the private sector, the military, higher education as a Christian counselor. Sometimes I can't help them with that. That's when I put them in touch personally with the ADF, because those guys have a good feel for you can win this thing or you won't win this thing. And here's what will happen if you win it, and here's what will happen if you don't. And that's why I have a chapter 12 in this book where, look, if it comes down to actually persecution, be very careful about how you handle it. I do say in the book, always make quitting your job and going somewhere else your last resort option, because if that kind of stuff is going on where you work, what they need more than anything is your good Christian example.
Yeah.
But if your livelihood is put at odds or becomes vulnerable, I tell them, contact the ADF. They will, free of charge, they will help you decide whether you should just leave and then file suit or just leave, period.
Is there one particular story of persecution in the workplace that stands out to you among all the stories you've heard over the years?
Yeah, and it was this. There was a particular manager who was a lapsed Christian. He had been a Christian, and he was excommunicated by his church for things that he did. And believe me, he should have been, I won't get into it, but he should have been excommunicated. So he went the other way. He became just a zealous anti-Christian. Mm-hmm. And when that happened, he went around to people, and this is in the book, he went around to people who had, you know, the 23rd Psalm hanging in their office and things like we do, framed Bible verses and things like that, and he made them take them down. He made them get rid of their Bibles. Hmm. He stopped prayer breakfasts that were happening on site before work, but they were employees getting together for a prayer breakfast, Bible studies at lunch. He cut out all of that. And was just about as, just about as bad as he could be in dealing with the people. Truly, truly, giving the Christians the hardest assignments, and then writing them hard, and not giving them the support they needed, and so forth. And eventually, they did have to just band together, and bring suit against him, and they won.
Wow. Well, as they should. And, you know, you would love to think that when you walk into a workplace situation, everybody's going to be fair. But the truth is, people are human, and you do find situations like that. Everything you've been talking about as we've been discussing this, I'm thinking, yeah, that reminds me of something that I saw or went through, or someone I talked to went through the same sort of thing. But I think it's important, as you mentioned, to set a 1 Corinthians 13 example at work. I thought that was really good advice as well.
It is, and also, as you're dealing, you know, you had a really good program on LGBTQ issues and that kind of thing, and one of the things that I say about political correctness in the workplace, and it's becoming worse and worse, is, look, it is always better to be biblically correct than politically correct. People who are on the receiving end of politically correct platitudes are not stupid. They know when people are just using the right terms and saying the supposed right thing just because they feel like they have to and they really don't mean it.
Yes.
But they also know when somebody's showing them true Christian love. And if you show true Christian love to people, they don't care if you say which of those terms you use.
Very good. Well, Dr. David Goetsch, thank you so much, Dr. Goetsch. Christians on the Job is the name of the book, and we'll be right back. This Janet Meffer Today podcast is brought to you by Preborn. We're wanting to save 250 preborn babies this January by offering free ultrasounds to women in crisis pregnancies. You can help by calling 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-2229 or janetmefford.com. To Janet Meffer Today. Well, Planned Parenthood's latest annual report is out, and it shows the abortion giant having killed more than 332,000 unborn babies over the last reported year. Absolutely awful. And this comes even as their finances continue to grow and their non-abortion services continue to decline. We're going to get some perspective on it all today from Mark Crutcher, who is president of Life Dynamics. And it's so good to have you with us, Mark. Thank you very much for joining us.
Well, it's my pleasure. I hadn't heard from you in a while. Into the fear that you didn't like me anymore.
Oh, we like you so much. I hate to bring you on just for something like this. We're going to have to remedy that. Absolutely. Because this, I mean, this is horrible. Anytime you hear anything about Planned Parenthood's actions over the last year, it's hard to listen to. But what do you make of the fact that Planned Parenthood now is doing more abortions than ever when, as I understand it, the overall abortion rate is actually going down? Is that the case? Am I understanding that correctly?
That's correct. But you have to understand something, that there has been an internal battle within the abortion industry. And as you know, we have done more work inside the industry, so we have contacts there. And I can tell you, I've talked to people years and years ago that this is going on, that there was this internal battle between Planned Parenthood and the rest of the abortion lobby and the abortion industry. And Planned Parenthood has not only been fighting with us, but they've been fighting with them because they're trying to eliminate all the competition. Oh, Planned Parenthood clearly wants to be the nation's abortionist. And so they've been quietly, there's even been times when they've had price wars over abortion. And they have been quietly trying to put out all, what they call the independents, out of business. And if you think we have a problem with Planned Parenthood, you ought to hear what some of the other people inside the abortion industry think about them.
Really? What kinds of things are they saying? Just getting angry at trying to be, you know, out, put out of business by Planned Parenthood, that sort of stuff?
Yes, they literally will say these people come in and literally try to put us out of business, and they'll even do things like price wars and cut prices and do a lot of advertising because they have money that these independents don't have. And, you know, that's like when people say, well, no money goes to Planned Parenthood to pay for abortions. It doesn't have to. They can take that money and use it to advertise. They can pay that money to use for all other services that they would otherwise have to spend money on, and that frees up money to pay for abortions.
Right. That's
so, you know, this idea that they put out here that abortion is only a tiny fraction of their overall business, that's an out-and-out lie. But to suggest that they're not operated like a business is just naive, and they are, and that's exactly what it is. And I would suggest on this latest thing that's out now, it's certainly no surprise to me, and I know you've been around long enough, Janet, it can't possibly be a surprise to you either.
No.
You know what kind of people these are.
Yeah. The lowest of the low. You know, the thing that really strikes me, though, when you're telling this about the infighting within the abortion industry, is then would it be fair to say that these numbers are reflective of Planned Parenthood poaching abortions from other abortion clinics? I mean, is that actually going on?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, when you have a shrinking total market, let's say, for example, it was the automobile industry. If the automobile industry was, their market share was shrinking, in other words, they were selling fewer cars this year than they did last year, but one of the companies continually grew every year, then obviously you would know that they were poaching business off the other companies.
And
that's what's going on here.
That's what's going on.
It's a business. That's what people need to understand. As I often call them, they're death merchants.
They are death merchants. Yeah, what about the non-abortion services declining significantly? They're doing fewer breast exams, fewer cancer screenings, fewer provisions of birth control information. No surprise there either, I would imagine, from your perspective.
Absolutely not. I mean, this is all of this other stuff is window dressing to make their abortion business look better.
Yeah.
But as I said a moment ago, they want to be the nation's abortionist. And I want to introduce something here, Janet, that I don't know if many people have thought about. But I wrote an article about this a couple of years ago, actually. I think that Planned Parenthood's ultimate goal is to be brought into the federal government as an actual government agency, probably under the Department of Health and Human Services.
Really?
And I think that if Hillary Clinton had been elected, we might have already seen that happen. And this would be an absolute devastating blow to people who are trying to protect the unborn if you brought Planned Parenthood in as a government agency. And I think that's exactly what they're building toward, and I think they've been building toward that for a long time.
Wow.
Janet, I'm sure you've noticed that around the country, in the last, say, 7 or 8 years, they have built these mega centers. I mean, gigantic abortion centers.
Yes.
You got one in Houston that they got two full floors of this giant building that are sitting empty right now because the building is so large.
Right.
They've done this all over the country. They've built these incredibly large facilities. And at a time when the total abortion market is shrinking and theirs is gaining ground and they're building these mega centers, that's pure 100% evidence or proof, in my view, that what I'm saying is true. They were looking at these centers becoming the government's abortion business. And I think they were modeling, I think they are modeling their approach after the Veterans Administration, where you have these gigantic regional medical centers and then little satellite centers off of those. And if you look at where they've built these giant centers around the country, they're very spread out.
Yeah.
And I think that's exactly what they've been building up to do, is to become an agency of the United States government.
Well, I had never thought of it like that before. I knew about the mega centers, as you mentioned, in a lot of these major cities, but it never occurred to me that they might want to be brought in as some sort of Department of Child Murder or something like that. But how would they even pull that off, even if you had Hillary win the presidency? Certainly, you're going to have opposition. You had a Republican-controlled Congress up until just recently. You know, how would they even get that done? Here they are. They're still under FBI investigation, if I'm keeping close enough tabs here. How in the world would they actually pull that off?
Well, first off, remember that there was a time when Obama was president that the Democrats controlled the House, the Senate, and the presidency.
Yes.
That would have been the perfect time.
Yeah.
And let's just say that Hillary Clinton had been elected in 2016, or she gets elected in 2020 or somebody like that. All the Democrats would need to do then is take control of the Senate, which is very tenuous to begin with. And they would control all three branches of government. It would be nothing at all for someone to propose that Planned Parenthood be brought in under the Department of Health and Human Services, and they would probably call it something like the United States Agency for Women's Health and Reproductive Care or something like that. And this would solve almost all of their day-to-day operational problems that they have right now. And it would make our job exponentially harder.
Yeah, it would.
Just imagine how hard it would be for us to try to close down a whole government agency.
Yeah, but how would they pitch that to the people of the United States and say, we need to absorb Planned Parenthood as part of HHS because why? What would they say?
Because women's health care this is their argument. I'm not saying this.
Yes, right.
They would say women's health care is being compromised because it's been politicized, and we need to take it out of the political realm and put it into the healthcare realm, so we're going to put it in there under the Department of Health and Human Services. And I think they could sell that. I think with the media behind them and hundreds of millions of dollars that would pour in from people like Warren Buffett and those kind of people, I think that they could pull that off.
Yeah. Oh, man. But, you know, how much more political could you be by bringing it into the auspices of the federal government? That's as political as it gets. It's a political thing if the Democrats were to pull that kind of maneuver.
Are you thinking that these people wouldn't be dishonest?
Well, yeah. Yes, they would be dishonest. Absolutely.
Look at the hijinks they pulled to get Obamacare passed.
Yes. Yeah. Don't put it past them.
I don't know why the Republican Party, and I've been wondering about this and all the years that this has been going on, why didn't the Republican Party come out here with a bunch of ads and show people what the Veterans Administration is like?
Yeah.
What it's like for people that were Vietnam veterans, for example, suffering from Agent Orange.
Tell you what, Mark, we're going to take a short break. We'll come back with Mark Crutcher from Life Dynamics right after this. You're listening to Janet Mefford Today. During this Sanctity of Human Life Month, we here at Janet Mefford Today have been all about saving human lives. That's why we've been partnering with the Ministry of Preborn. Preborn funds pregnancy centers across the country so they can offer free ultrasounds to women in crisis pregnancies. And as we know, ultrasound is probably the most effective way of convincing abortion-minded women to let their babies live. After all, few moms can choose abortion when they see their baby's heartbeat or their baby's beautiful little body. We've asked you to step up this month and help us save 250 preborn babies by sponsoring a free ultrasound for a woman in a crisis pregnancy. And so far, thanks to you, we have saved 195 babies. But we want to save more. We want to get to that magic number of 250 preborn babies, and we need you. Would you please join us to support the Ministry of Preborn and help save the lives of 250 babies and get the gospel to their moms? A gift of $28 will provide one ultrasound. For a gift of $140, you can provide five free ultrasounds to women in crisis pregnancies, and every single gift helps. Just call 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-2229, or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. Now, we know this is especially important at a time when a state like New York has just legalized abortion up until the moment of birth. This is evil, and as Christians, we've got to stand up for these vulnerable little people who are created in the image of God. To donate, please call now, 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-2229, or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. All gifts are tax deductible, and 100% of your gift goes directly to saving babies. We need you. 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-2229, or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. Thank you. We are back on Janet Mefford Today. My guest, Mark Crutcher, president of Life Dynamics. You can check them out at lifedynamics.com. And we're talking about Planned Parenthood's latest annual report. They're killing more babies than ever before. And we're discussing some of the details of this report. Now, Mark, one of the things that came out of this report was the fact that they have record high numbers in national office and affiliate financial data. $1.9 billion in net assets, up from $1.6 billion in 2017, and almost $564 million in taxpayer funding. This is despicable. I was looking at this statistic, Mark. CNS News had reported on this, that Planned Parenthood actually did more than 2 million abortions while receiving federal funding through appropriations approved by the House when it was controlled by Republicans. That is a disgrace.
Yes, it is. And, you know, the other day, you know, Planned Parenthood has a new national director, and she openly stated that abortion is the core of their business.
Wow.
Now, this is something that they've always denied, that this was just 3% of their business and that it was just a kind of a sideline and that they're really about women's health care and all this. And this woman came out and openly stated that, no, the core of our existence is reproductive health care and abortion.
Yeah. Yeah, she did say that.
She did say that. And you know, the even with these people, sometimes the truth oozes out accidentally, I'm sure. And I'm sure she caught a lot of flack for that internally. She may not be around there long, was my first thought. I think back about Pamela Meraldo when she became president of Planned Parenthood. She made some really idiotic statements, and I think she was gone in less than a year. But anyway, yeah, the truth oozed out of them. This is not what they want people to think about Planned Parenthood, that this is basically the nation's abortionist.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it seems they're getting more bold. I mean, you look at what just happened in New York, and I think all pro-lifers are just reeling. They basically, essentially legalized euthanasia, I mean, infanticide in New York. You know, you can
right.
kill a baby all the way up to the moment of birth. And Governor Cuomo is all about saying, well, we had to do this because Roe v. Wade is about to be overturned, which on the one hand you say, well, We'll see. On the other hand, if Roe were overturned, that would not suddenly make abortion illegal in all states anyway. It would just throw the question back to the states.
Well, yeah, it depends on the mechanism they use. If the Supreme Court were to come out and issue a ruling that Roe was poorly decided because the unborn child is a person, then that ends the whole thing, because then the child is protected by the Constitution.
Yeah.
But most legal scholars say, and on both sides of the issue, that won't be the way, if they overturn Roe, that they'll do it. What they'll do is they'll come out and say that the Constitution is silent on abortion. It doesn't mention abortion, which it doesn't, by the way.
Right.
And that there is, therefore, a state's rights issue, and send it back to the states. And that would be, and I'm writing a new article about this particular issue right now, that would be an absolute devastating blow to the cause of the unborn, to have this thing sent back to the 50 states.
Yeah, it would.
It would be horrible. And anybody that's pushing for that is either not pro-life or they don't understand the ramifications of that. But that would be a devastating blow to the unborn to have this thing sent back to the 50 states.
Well, one of the things that I think is encouraging, Mark, is, for example, when you look at how many abortion clinics there used to be, there are far fewer. What is it, under 1,000 by now?
Oh, it's under 600.
Under 600. Yeah, I couldn't remember the exact number, but it's really gone down. I know they're trying to have more medical abortion done in some of these clinics. I mean, the abortion industry is very desperate. There has been so much good work done through Life Dynamics and others in the pro-life movement exposing what this industry is all about. How do they arrest that problem? I mean, it's not a problem. It's a great thing. But for them, it's a problem, because if you look at the polling, you see, what was this latest poll I saw? 51% of millennials actually want abortion restrictions. I mean, we have a pro-life generation coming up. That's
right.
Not good for these people.
Well, this, what you're describing there is what first caused me several years ago to start looking at the possibility. I'm looking at this from the standpoint of, if I were in the abortion industry and I was advising our people what to do about this problem, I would suggest that when we have people in the White House, in the House, in the Senate that are on our side, we get Planned Parenthood brought in as a federal agency.
Like you said.
That would be the solution to those problems. That's what I was saying a moment ago. It would solve all their day-to-day operational issues. Because the great irony here is, Janet, and I think I've been on your show talking about this before, what's killing the abortion industry is choice. Because so many people in the medical community have chosen not to be involved.
Right.
And if you'll notice, one thing that happened in New York the other day was not only that they made abortion legal right up to the instant of birth, but they are saying now non-doctors can do it.
Right.
Now, their original argument, you know, 50 years ago was, oh, abortion's got to be legalized so it can be done by physicians in clean medical environments. You remember that argument?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Now, the interesting thing about this is, and another irony here, is that if you go back and study that, even the other side admits that the overwhelming majority of illegal abortions done prior to Roe were done by doctors who were simply breaking the law.
Mm.
But almost all abortions at that time were being done by trained medical professionals, physicians.
That's
now they're pushing non-physicians do it, which is already the case in the largest abortion state in the union, California. Now they're saying non-doctors should be allowed to do abortions. We're going to end up with a situation, as this continues now with New York doing it, where a higher percentage of abortions were being done by physicians prior to Roe than are being done by physicians today.
Huh.
That's where we're headed.
Yeah, that's true. That's
and,
true.
You know, it just again proves what the lies that you have to tell if you're going to try to defend legalized abortion. You cannot tell the truth. You cannot let people see what goes on behind the scenes. And we're fixing to release a new report next week on another issue involving horrific things that are going on inside the abortion industry. But you cannot tell the truth. You cannot be transparent and keep abortion legal. You just can't do it.
Right, right. Well, and you see they're beginning to target doctors who have conscience problems with abortion as well. Well, you got to refer somebody for an abortion. I mean, these sorts of things are beginning to happen. We're going to force you against your will to help in this quest to kill more children. I mean, this is totalitarianism, just flat out.
They already force you and I, who know it to be murder, to help pay for it.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's not a big leap from that to telling doctors. And by the way, if you are, again, looking at a situation where Planned Parenthood becomes an agency of the U.S. government, then you could easily tell, you could easily be able to tell doctors, if you don't perform abortions, you can't keep your license.
Yes. Oh, can you imagine? You know what? I would love to say I don't think it would ever come to that point, but these days, you just don't know.
Well, right now, Janet, think about this. If you and I were to go back 50 years, and I would just tell you the things that are going on right now that we know for a fact are going on, and said, one day, Janet, this will be going on in America, you'd have said, you're nuts.
True. Yep.
That will never happen.
Yep.
So we can't afford to sit up here and even in our wildest imaginations come up with these grandiose theories about what could happen and what could not happen and say any of them are impossible.
Yeah, we really can't do that. You have to prepare for the absolute worst. And I'm wondering if your theory here on the potential for Planned Parenthood to be brought under the auspices of HHS, for example, is on the radar to any extent in Washington. Are there a lot of people talking about this possibility that you've heard?
You mean people on our side?
Yeah, on our side.
No, I don't think so.
Really?
You know, our people on our side tend to be reactive, not proactive.
Yeah.
And that's one of the problems that we've got. And, again, I'm writing a new article right now about a way that we can become more proactive instead of reactive to everything the other side does.
Good.
And we try to manage by crisis. And management by crisis is a horrible way to run any institution, whether it's a business or a nonprofit or whatever, or an entity like what we're trying to do. If you manage by crisis, what you guarantee is that you'll always be in a crisis situation.
True. That's true.
And we kind of hopscotch from crisis to crisis in this movement. And that's the way it's going to be as long as we're reactive to what the other side does. We've got to start being the ones who take initiative.
Yeah, we sure do. That's really wise, Mark. And I would love to have you come back and discuss more at a later date. And I hope you'll be able to come back. It would be great.
I'll come back anytime you call, Janet.
All right, you got it. Well, thank you so much, Mark Crutcher. Go to Life Dynamics website, lifedynamics.com. And Mark, as always, just a pleasure to talk to you. And we'll talk again soon. Thank you so much. This hour of Janet Mefford Today brought to you by SkyPass Entertainment's The Least of These, The Graham Stain Story. Rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13. In theaters February 1st. For more information, theleastofthese.movie. Thanks so much for joining us on Janet Mefford Today. We'll see you next time.